Hi, this is David Arkenstone.
Amy Grant here.
Happy holidays from all of us at Nick at Night.
I'm Lauren Daigle.
This is Luther Vandross.
You're listening to the Sounds of Christmas
podcast.
Welcome to the Sounds of Christmas podcast. I'm Ken Kessler. If you're new to this podcast, I want to start by saying thanks for joining us. If you're not new, welcome back. Either way, I'm glad you're here. Now, to avoid any confusion, I want to start off by saying there won't be any music played here. This is a place for conversation. I'll talk about Christmas music and some related topics, sometimes by myself and sometimes with guests. If you're looking for music, just go to soundsofchristmas.com and click on the tree or the player on the front page or on the Listen Now page. We play the best variety of Christmas music all year long. Well, except in October, when we play the best variety of Halloween music. Very happy to have Russ Lorenzen with us. Hi, Russ. Thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
And great to be here.
Now, Wikipedia says about you that you're an interpreter of jazz standards, a retro crooner style, a mix of Broadway jazz and pop.
How do you almost as though I wrote it or had someone write it for me?
So does
that kind of covers it. Yeah, I mean, that's mostly, you know, I came out of, I started performing when I was 7 years old. I won a coveted elf role in The Elves and the Shoemaker. That was my big premiere. But throughout most of my life and into my 40s, I was doing musical theater and I was touring actor doing theater. And around 2005, what I really wanted to, most people, I'm an actor, but I really want to direct. I really wanted to move into the jazz space. And so I started doing what we commonly call cabaret, right? So in San Francisco and New York, and toured around, started putting some shows together. And eventually I was lucky enough to hire myself a musical director named Kelly Park. He's been the MD on all the albums and all my shows. We've been working together almost 20 years now, but who is a hardcore jazz teacher and musician. He taught at Berklee College of Music, from whence he graduated in jazz, big band arranger, that sort of thing. And so that's the style I moved into. And in that sort of, they call me a retro crooner, right? Because the crooners are the old guys. And so now that I'm an old guy, maybe I'm not retro anymore. But that's the style I like to do. I feel like I do it well. That's where I go.
Well, one of the things that I love about your music is that you do a lot of songs that a lot of people have maybe forgotten about. It's not the standards.
Right.
It's, a little traveling music. Your first album, you had Moonlight in Vermont and A Nightingale Sang at Berklee Square, which a lot of people associate with Christmas, but you also had Christmas in San Francisco, which, I mean, I know there's lots of Christmas songs that are about specific areas, but I feel like that's bigger than just a local song. And other than maybe Vic Damone, I don't know of anybody else that has covered that.
Nobody. It's just me and Vic. I heard that song when I moved from our mutual sort of hometown down south, Southern California. When I moved up to San Francisco in 97, that first year that I was there, I was feeling a little lonely at Christmas. I was missing friends, that sort of thing. And there's an adult contemporary station in San Francisco. It's like the number four station in the U.S. For AC. But they switched to an all Christmas format starting around Thanksgiving. And I was sitting there one night with a glass of wine in front of my fireplace, and on comes Vic Damone singing this beautiful song, Christmas in San Francisco. And that was when I finally fell in love with my new city. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous song. It was written for Tony Bennett, actually, by a guy named Tony Romano, who was a guitarist for both Tony Bennett and Vic Damone. And Tony wrote it thinking it would be a great bookend to I Left My Heart in San Francisco for Tony to sing. So we gave it to Mr. Bennett and to Ralph Sharon, who was his musical director at the time. And they listened to it, but Columbia Records wouldn't let them record it because they thought it would dilute I Left My Heart in San Francisco. So they said no.
Wow.
Tony Romano turned around and said, hey, Vic, I got a song for you. And Vic recorded it, and it was a big hit for him. And so Coint, the radio station in San Francisco, would play this every year. It's on probably, I don't know, four or six times a day, every few hours, with a couple of other local songs. And I loved it. And I knew when I did the traveling show, when we were in the studio, it was around Christmas time and I was doing my annual Christmas show and I wanted to do this song. And we thought, well, it's about a place. It goes with the traveling theme of the album and the show I was touring was a little travel music. And during December, we swapped that one in. I used to do, I'm Always Drunk in San Francisco. That was my other San Francisco song. And so, but at Christmas time, we swapped that one in. So we put it in. I did change a lyric with the permission of Tony Romano's kids, for his estate. The original lyric went, let's take a peek in Chinatown, eating lychee nuts and barbecued boar, which I thought was a horrid lyric. I changed it to, let's get some tea in Chinatown, listen to jazz in Fillmore. In the Fillmore, which is the Jazz District of San Francisco. And so I made that change. We recorded it and I sent the album off to Coit, to the program director there, never knowing what was going to happen. Right.
Right.
Well, he loved it, put it in the playlist. But then there was an article in the San Francisco Chronicle, maybe a month later during Christmas season, where he was quoted, like they were talking about going to Christmas and all that stuff. And apparently everybody at the station hated the original version by Vic because of that horrid lyric. And they would just cringe every time it would come on. And they were so excited to get mine because they, in my, their opinion, I had fixed the lyric. And so it's been, when we were 18 years ago, they still play it every Christmas. It is my number one song. If you go on Spotify, I've had something like 200,000 streams or something. It's number one for me on Apple. Everywhere I go, that's my number one song.
Wow.
Yeah.
And as a Christmas music addict, when I come across a non-Christmas album and there's a Christmas song on there, like with a little traveling music, it's always such a nice treat, a nice surprise. I just love finding those things. But it was later that same year that you put that on a Christmas album, What I Want for Christmas.
Yeah, we released A Little Travel Music, we did an album release party at the Plush Room in San Francisco. And the next morning, this would have been in April of 2006, we went in the studio and recorded What I Want for Christmas because I wanted to do a Christmas album. Because for a musician, as you know, a Christmas album is the gift that keeps on giving. Like right. It's every year it's new for somebody and the songs are timeless if you do them right, you know, Mariah excluded. you know, if you do it right, you can make it a keepsake. And that's what I wanted to do. So we put that album out and we thought, well, okay, let's just, so it basically, it's just a bonus cut on the What I Want for Christmas. It's the same track on both albums, but it belonged on a Christmas album as well as the non-Christmas album.
Yeah. And as with your first album, I look at the tracks on this and it's for the most part songs that you don't see on everybody's Christmas album. You know, lots of people do the Mariah song. Lots of people do Last Christmas. The only one here that kind of stands out in that sort of vein is My Grown Up Christmas List. But everything else is, it's all these terrific classic, I don't know if they would be called standards because they don't get covered as much, but all these great songs that I feel like you sort of rescued and kept alive.
Well, you know, it depends on the station, right? So there's a station that is very near and dear to my heart that does plays my stuff both during Christmas and non-Christmas, called the Great American Songbook Radio Station. It's an internet station, I'll hear some of those. It's the only place I hear those songs. That I'll hear Peggy Lee will sing Little Jack Frost, or I'll hear, you know, Bing Crosby in that medley. There's a medley of about five songs we've strung together, and Bing sings one or two of them. Peggy Lee sings one. We did Snow, which was great, with three of my friends from the movie White Christmas,
right?
Which was a lot of fun to record and listen to. But then there's some new stuff. The opening track on that album is My Favorite Time of Year by a New York singer-songwriter named Peter Cincotti, who's a big crooner, pop, jazz kind of guy. And it's a terrific song about Christmas in New York. And I was really glad to do that one as well.
But even with that and my Growing Up Christmas List, all of these, because of your style, they all fit together. None of them seem out of place at all.
Well, right. That
works.
You know, that's the thing that a singer has to learn. It's like what fits. And some try to do crossover stuff and they'll want to do, and some are great at different genres and different sounds in their voice. For me, I just relate to, I need a good melody and meaningful lyrics. Those are the two most important things to me, which is what the Great American Songbook is all about. And frankly, Christmas music, American Christmas music, is a part of the Great American Songbook. It just happens to be seasonal. But these songs, you know, what makes a songbook, a song part of the songbook, is that people, lots of people want to record it over and over again. Lots of people want to sing it over and over again. And so, yeah, you do hear White Christmas and Silver Bells and all of those other ones. But these songs just never rose as high as those other ones. And I think they're terrific songs. So I'm all about promoting lesser known songs, lesser known composers who are just as good as Cole Porter and, Gershwin's and Irving Berlin and all of those folks.
I don't even know what the specific reason is that some of these songs that were recorded by legendary performers the first time around, why they didn't get the same staying power when they're really good. You look at your next album, In the Holiday Spirit, it opens with Shake Hands with Santa Claus. I could probably count on one hand the number of performers that have done that.
Right. But it was a huge hit for Louis Prima.
Yeah.
You know, but so he's the one that you know, and then that's the one, the arrangement that we borrowed with our big band was to do them, because I love that song. But you don't hear a lot of people do it, and that's why I wanted an album that fit with Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra and, you know, all the other Johnny Mathis, all the classic Christmas albums. But I wanted the different songs. So the people would go, hey, I never heard that one before. That's really cool. Because a lot of people think when they first hear it, if they're not really familiar with Christmas music in general, think I wrote half of them. They're like, oh, that's a great song. What was your inspiration? Like Jingle's the Christmas Cat. There's only one other, well, there's two now recordings that I've of that song. I heard it in person at the Feinstein's in San Francisco, performed by Freddie Cole, Nat King Cole's brother.
Right.
Was doing his show at Feinstein's, and it was December, and he said, well, I guess I should throw in a Christmas song, and he had recorded that some years earlier, and so he did it, and I talked to him after the show, and I said, my God, that's a great song, and I thought he wrote it, and he said, no, it was written by Ray Parker, so he sent me his CD, because it was out of print, so he sent me a copy of his CD that we transcribed for our own purposes to do that song. And it's one of my favorites on the album. I think it's a cute little, you know, jazz number with vibraphones. It's a very cool arrangement.
And you mentioned Freddie Cole. His version is the only other one that I think I've ever heard.
There's one by a guy out of New York named Jim Caruso, who runs a thing called Cast Party on Monday nights at Birdland.
Okay.
And it's on his Christmas album as well.
Okay. That's
after mine. So I think he took my, he borrowed from me, not from Freddie.
Yeah. And I think that was just in the last few years that came out. And you mentioned Dean Martin, and you've got the Christmas Blues on here. Again, I could count on maybe one hand the people who have done that one.
Yeah. Yeah. But isn't it great how that song fits with, say, there's two John Pizzarelli tunes on it that were just written in the last, 15 years. And that Dean Martin song fits right alongside a John Pizzarelli song, which fits alongside, Jingle's the Christmas Cat. And
yeah,
the last cut on that album, Christmas Time All Over the World, Sammy Davis Jr., I think, is the only person that's ever recorded it.
It's the only one I know of. Yeah.
And that one, interestingly enough, that same radio station that is still playing Christmas in San Francisco, they picked that one up because I recorded it with the San Francisco Boys Chorus. So it's not a song about Christmas or about San Francisco, but it's got a San Francisco real connection. And so they play those two songs every year, which is great. I mean, it's really lovely. I was standing in a Subway sandwich shop the first time I heard it on the radio. I was just standing there and all of a sudden, oh, wait, that's me.
Oh, that's going to be a great feeling.
It was fun. It was fun.
Let me be the first to wish you Merry Christmas, Steve and Edie. Maybe a couple other versions, but not many.
Not many. No. And that one I love. When I was in eighth grade there in San Diego, I was in a drama class, and one of our assignments was to work with a partner and do some sort of lip sync, something or other. And the teacher had a bunch of albums there in the classroom. And we picked the Steve and Edie Christmas album, and that song was on it. And we did that holiday feeling, which I have done in my Christmas show for years and years and years with different female partners that I would invite to come do the show. And we would always do that holiday feeling. But that particular song I love a lot. I think it's a really beautiful Christmas love song.
So after In the Holiday Spirit, you kind of retired and you just had a new album come out this month.
A week ago, yeah.
And it's kind of a new old album. It's a new album, but it's a recording from a concert in 2008. The album's called Standard Time, and there's no Christmas music on it, unfortunately, for me. But again, it's a lot of terrific songs that fit right in with all the stuff we've been talking about. Was this one show or is it a mix of shows?
The recordings are from two different nights. At the time that I did that album, this was back in 2008, and I was really getting tired of hearing people, because in my space where I work, people would say, why do you sing all that old stuff? You know, nobody sings that anymore. And I was hearing that the Great American Songbook was going extinct and all of this. And I knew that was not true, because in my inbox, I was getting great songs that were being handed to me by composers asking me to, because they like that style that I sing in. And so I started to think about that. Like, there are great songs out there. And so I set out to prove that The Great American Songbook did not stop being written in 1959, but was still alive today. Great songs were still happening. So everything on the album had been written in the previous 20 years or so. So previous 20, 25 years. So there's a couple of Harry Connick tunes on there, a couple of John Pizzarelli. There's a Lionel Richie song on there, a couple by my musical director that he had written. One, the oldest one on the album is one he wrote when he was 17 in high school, which is a really cool swing song. But yeah, they all fit, right? They're all in that style. And they're great songs. Again, come back to great melodies and meaningful lyrics that you can understand.
Yeah, it has that, you know, that classic feel. It's hard to sum it up in just a couple words. It's like a definition of art. I know it when I see it.
Right, right. Oh, and you asked me about the show. I put this show together, and we toured it for almost a year all around the country. And then the final two performances of the show we did at the Metropolitan Room nightclub in New York City, and had them both taped, thinking we'd be putting out a live album the following year. But as your listeners may recall, in 2008, we had a recession, just a little one. And, you know, a lot of money dried up, including for me. I lost my day job, and a lot of performing arts centers, people like that who were hiring me, their funding went away, and they really scaled back. And so the original recordings went in a box and sat there until January of this year. I'd never even listened to them. I didn't know what we had. And I found myself with some extra time this year. I'd lost my day job again at the beginning of this year. And I decided, you know what? Now I'm going to do it. I'm not performing anymore, but I could pull these out and see if we've got anything. And so I worked with a brilliant producer in the Netherlands who I just sent him to. I didn't even have a CD player. I'm like, I don't know if there's anything here. So take a listen. and he fell in love with it. It's his kind of music. And so he said, I want to do this as a project for you, and I'm not even going to charge you for it. I just want to do it as a project of love, which I was amazing to me.
Yeah.
So he did all the mixing and mastering for us, and we put it out. So yeah. And what's fun is 15 years later, I listen back and I go, you know what? I was right 15 years ago. These are great songs, and they've held up over time. And that's the most important part.
So it kind of makes me wonder what else was in the box that didn't make this album. Is there enough for a standard time too?
No, you know, we recorded that night. We recorded 20 songs, 15 made it on the album. And the other five, one is a song, it was a novelty song that I would never put in the mix of this album. And then the other four were, one was a song that I used to introduce the band at the end. So we'd start singing and then I'd go around and give everybody a big solo. So, you know, the piano and the bass and the drum and the guitar. And so it was really long and it didn't fit on an album or on a playlist or anything like that. And then the other two, I didn't get a good take on either of them. So we had to leave those out. So no, there's nothing else that I'm aware of. there is a videotape of my Tony Bennett show that I don't think you could fix the sound enough. I was in good voice. It was good music, another live show. I don't know. We'd have to like pull the audio track from the video and then see if there was any way to mix or master it. But that would be the only other extended decent recording that I have that I think I could do something with, but I'm not sure.
Okay. So there go my hopes that the Christmas shows had been captured.
Yeah. No, you know, that's a great question because I know we did record at Feinstein's. They would just do an archival recording and give you a copy, and I've got those somewhere. I don't recall, as I've listened to them, that any of them were good enough. I listened to them back, but that was, you know, 15 years ago. And I'm not sure any of them are good enough. And I'm not even actually sure that there's anything that I did in the shows that I haven't recorded other than like duets and things like that, guests who came in. But even that, like I would always have a male guest come in and we would do the Little Drummer Boy, Peace on Earth, the David Bowie and Bing Crosby number, which I did record on the last Christmas album with myself doing both parts. If you're gonna ask somebody, you know, ask the one who sings the best with you. And I thought that was me.
So there's a big gap between In the Holiday Spirit and Standard Time when you were kind of retired, and you've already mentioned that you're not singing anymore. And if you don't mind, I hope you would share why you're not singing anymore.
Yeah. So part of it was I retired because I wanted to move to Europe. So that's initially why I retired. I wasn't about to try and find a band over here and start all over again. So I wanted to be able to move over here. And as we moved to Spain at the end of 2019, just before the pandemic. And then in 2021, I was diagnosed with HPV positive tonsil cancer. So parents out there, if you're listening, get your kids vaccinated against HPV. I know I'm going to preach this to everybody. It's an entirely preventable cancer as long as you're vaccinated before you're 25. Boys and girls can get it. It's the number one. It's a huge epidemic now among people my age. I've just turned 60 this year. And it's huge. It generally hits in men. It'll hit between 50 and 60. And it basically HPV causes head and neck cancers. So throat cancer and tonsil cancer and sinus cancer, those kinds of things. Not brain cancer, interestingly. But if you're vaccinated before you're 25, after that, it's not very effective, apparently. So I got diagnosed with that in my right tonsil and had surgery, had it, and then did chemo and radiation. And the radiation is what killed my voice for good. And you'll hear as the longer I talk, the raspier I get, because it just messed with my chords. If I was still in the States, I perhaps would go see a vocal therapist and see if I could get some of it back. But as it is now, I have no saliva. So your audience can't see, but I've got this giant glass of water that I'm drinking all the time. I don't produce my own saliva anymore, again, because of the radiation. So like a Christmas album, cancer is the gift that keeps on giving. I'm perfectly healthy now in every way, except for these lingering symptoms, the loss of my singing voice. And mostly it's that I can't really sustain notes. It cuts out like a skipping record. It's a very weird thing. So I can hum and that sort of thing, but not enough to go back to being a performer, which made, as you said, we released a new album a week ago. And normally when you do an album release, the artist gets up and sings stuff from the album. And I was not able to do that. We had our album release party in Manhattan last Friday. And I'm fortunate enough to have a lot of friends in the music business. And so I had five guest artists come in who sang various numbers from the album, which not by mistake, hammers home the point that these are great songs that could be sung by lots of different artists in lots of different ways. So they came in and covered the material. Plus, when we taped the shows for the record, for the album, we also videotaped it. So I was able to sing virtually at my own album release by showing video of a few songs that I had done back in 2008 from the exact recording sessions that we did the album for.
That must have been tough to put this together, to decide to do it and go through everything to put this new album together after what you'd been through with this medical crisis.
You know, it was. I'll tell you, the loss of my voice didn't bother me so much when I already wasn't performing anymore, but I could still sing in the shower and sing for friends or whatever. So it wasn't like, oh my God, I'm losing my career over this. But now listening back to it, I've realized how much I've missed it and how much I enjoy recording and working with other musicians. I miss when we had rehearsal for the show, the original band was there, my musical director and the guys were on the album. And so to be in the room with them and hear the same arrangements and somebody else is singing it, not me, was tough. I'll admit it. On the other hand, I'm so, so, so happy that we had the recordings, because the songs deserve to be heard. And one of the fun parts about doing the show originally was that I worked very closely with many of the composers who came to the show. So if you would see the long form of the video, the shows that we taped, the composers are there in the audience and I'm singing their songs to them. And I've stayed in touch with them. So I'm thankful to be able to get that out for them, that their music is going to be heard and in the way that we did it and that they were a part of producing. So yeah, it was tough, but I mean, you know, it is what it is. I can sit around and cry about it, or I can produce other things. And, you know, and then I've got, you know, Julie Andrews went through the same thing, right? You know, she had surgery, lost her voice. And I joke that I'm going to get a tattoo of WWJD, except it would be, instead of Jesus, it'd be, what would Julie do? And so I'm working on a children's book that'll be out next Christmas. So there is more Christmas material to come, Ken, not music, but it's Christmas material based on that song I was talking about, Jingles the Christmas Cat. I came up with I always thought that the cat should have an origin story like Rudolph or, you know, Frosty the Snowman or something. And so I wrote a story and I've been working with an editor from Random House. We couldn't get it out in time for this Christmas, but the song will have its 30th anniversary next year. So it'll be out in time for next Christmas. So I'm really excited about it. So, and there's two more books in the pipeline, because they apparently, to get a book deal, they don't want you just to be a one-shot wonder. They want to have several. So I had to give treatments for two others. So there will be three Christmas books coming in the following year. So, because I love Christmas, I think, as much as you do.
Oh, that's terrific. That's great to hear. What else are you diving into or anything that you can talk about?
Yeah, I mean, those are the main creative projects. I am working with some other artists to get their stuff out. And one of the things that I've learned over the past year or so. Like I've trying to learn how to monetize my back catalog, and it's primarily Christmas, right? Like that's two now. It's half of my catalog is Christmas music, right. And trying to make sure that I'm monetizing that and getting some, you know, recurring income from it. So I've gone through a big exercise of learning how to work with Spotify and Apple Music and Amazon and Deezer and all these other big outfits to keep the music alive, keep it in front of people, get new listeners, that sort of thing. And based on what I've learned, I'm working with some other younger artists who I believe in to help them do that as well. Because I mean, it's a game. The music business is a game, and Spotify is the big player and keeps changing the rules. So you're always trying to figure out how do I stay ahead of it. And so that's probably the other thing that I'm working on. That's not me particularly, but I'm staying in the business.
Well, it's so great to catch up with you. What is the best way for other people to stay caught up with you? Is it website, social media? How do we find you?
Yes, yes, and yes. My website is www.russlorenson.com, LORENSON. On Facebook, it's Russ Lorenson Fans. On Instagram, it's Russ Lorenson. YouTube is Russ Lorenson SF, I think is that one. So I'm pretty much just type Russ Lorenson into Google, and like I'm the only one that comes up, and you'll see lots of different places to get me. And would love to have people hear the music, especially this time of year. It's a lot of fun. It's really fun to find out where I've been Shazammed. One of the things that Apple Music does for artists is tell you how many times your music has been Shazammed and where. And so I'm finding like really weird places that Christmas in San Francisco, just this week, was in Germany and in Africa. What was the country? Like, Malawi or something? Like it was, I want to say that some, Egypt, like, and I find people are listening to my music all over the world. And it's kind of a crazy thing to think that it's out there. My number one market is the US, but number two on Spotify is France. Like people, and it's all Christmas stuff, and people are listening to English Christmas music, but in France.
I think it was 5, 6, 7 years ago, something like that, I started keeping the Sounds of Christmas station on year round because I kept getting emails from people. So I thought, well, I'm going to try it and see. And in the admin area for my station, I can see where people are listening, at least the city anyway. It's not creepy. I'm not looking in your windows. But there was a time, it was in June, I think, and there were three people tuned in or three devices tuned in at the same time from this small town in Germany.
Oh, weird.
And I thought, and they had it on for days and days and days, just nonstop. And I thought that was really weird. And I got an email from somebody who said that they listen, and it happened to be one of in this little town, and that they had a few Christmas shops, and they were playing the Sounds of Christmas in it. And I thought, how cool is that?
Yeah.
That you can find that out. I mean, you know, it's, and I don't say that to say, so I'm such a big deal because they're listening. And I just thought, wow, that is so neat. And I'm so grateful. And the technology makes it possible to see that's so cool. So when you can see something like that's great that somebody Shazammed your tracks and you're big in France.
We're played. I mean, when I look at the, like for the last year, where the music's been played, like it's 120 countries. Like people, like how that happens, I have no idea. A really funny story from this week, a friend of mine, for my 60th birthday, a bunch of us went to Greece, including this guy I'm talking about. And we were just talking to him yesterday, and he lives down Santa Barbara area near LA. And he went to a party at somebody's house. And it was a big, you know, hoity-toity Hollywood party that he was at. And he got talking to this lawyer who works for Disney. and they were talking about Christmas music. It was a holiday party, and they were talking about Christmas music. And my friend said, you know, what do you listen to? What do you like? You must have be exposed to a lot of things. You know, I don't really like that old timey Christmas music, the Bing Crosby and Dean Martin, and I don't like any of that stuff. So our friend says, well, who do you like? Who do you listen to? Expecting to hear, you know, Michael Bublé or Mariah Carey or, you know, something. He goes, well, there's this guy named Russ Lawrenson. Have you ever heard of him? And my friend just about fell over, like, wait, what? And this guy loves my stuff, which is ironic because it's all old-timey Christmas music. I mean, if you listen to it, big band arrangements and all that. But this total stranger at a party in L.A., like, at Disney is a fan, and it was just so funny that my friend happened to be talking to him. It's like that kind of stuff. You just go, wow, that's like, and this is one of the things that I want to say about when you were talking about how hard it is. I don't have any children. I'm not going to have any children, especially now at my age. So these albums are my children. This is the legacy I'm leaving, and it makes me feel really good. Not that from an ego point of view that people are going to be listening to me for years, but that I put something into the world that makes people happy, that doesn't require me to push them to do anything with it. They just enjoy it and they put it on and it brings happiness in their life, and that it does it on its own and will do it. I mean, Chris, you know, like we talked about, Christmas in San Francisco came out almost 20 years ago. And by the way, I should tell you, just exclusive for you and your listeners. I forgot when you asked me what else I'm working on. What we're hoping to do, keep your fingers crossed, pray to the music gods. I would love to, I want to re-release the first two albums that came out in 2006. We recorded those in my music director's brother's home recording studio in his converted garage. And they're fine. They're good, but there's things I would love to fix. And there's some, I would love to remaster them and fix some things on them. So his brother thinks he still has the original Pro Tools files that we did when we made the album. Wow. And if that's the case, I'm hoping that we'll do it for a 20th anniversary release in 2026. So there will hopefully be a new version of What I Want for Christmas, a little juiced. So keep your fingers crossed.
I definitely will. And we'll have to make sure that you come back to let us know.
For sure. Yeah. I forget about that one because it's like 2 years away. So
you had some books to write in the meantime.
Exactly. Yeah, I got to finish those up too.
Well, it's been so much fun catching up and talking with you, Russ. Thanks so much for making time for us.
Absolutely. And thank you, Ken. Like you've been playing my stuff now, like I think since 2015, since the
last. At least, yeah.
Yeah. And you've always been so kind and generous. And I really appreciate that what you do and that I get to be a part of it. So thank you very much.
Oh, it is my pleasure. I started doing the Sounds of Christmas because I had hoped that there were other Christmas music weirdos like me that would love to hear more than just the top hits. It's nothing against. I like Bing Crosby's White Christmas. I just don't want to hear it every hour.
Right.
And there's so Bing recorded so much more music, and there's just so much out there. And I was delighted to come across your Christmas music. It's that rare thing that is new and old at the same time.
Yeah.
It's something that you feel like you've heard before, and at the same time, something you've never heard before. And that's very rare. And that it's Christmas music makes it extra special for somebody like me.
Awesome. Awesome.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Ken. This has been a pleasure.
And thank you so much for listening and for continuing to support the Sounds of Christmas station and podcast. I told you how to listen to the station, and you're already listening to the podcast, so my work here is just about done. All of our episodes are available on the Sounds of Christmas website. Just click the podcast tab. And we also have a Linktree page listing most, if not all, of the sites that stream our podcast. So you can find your favorite and you can click on over and subscribe, and you'll never miss another episode. If you have comments or suggestions on this episode, previous episodes, or the Sounds of Christmas station, feel free to reach out to me on social media or through the website. Thanks again. And may you always believe in Santa Claus.